listener production.
Hi, this is Paul McIntyre. Welcome to the MI3 Audio Edition. I've been a business journalist for 25 years covering the marketing, media, agency and tech sectors. In this series, we talk to industry leaders about the global and local developments that you need to be across this week. Well, we've got our favourite media ecologist back on the mics today. Actually, he's the only one we know, but the US-based founder of the Myers Report and Media Village, Jack Myers, got it pretty much bang on in the second week of MI3's life 5 years ago this month, actually, when he forecast that 95% of all media transactions would be informed by machine intelligence by 2025, 65% completely automated, and just 25% would remain with people, relationships, and ideas. The equivalent in Australia for what Jack's talking about is how media and tech companies here trade upwards of $15 billion each year in advertising airtime and digital pixels. But remember, those figures I just cited were forecast back in 2019, before Gen AI was a rock star. Well, Jack's updated his outlook, and he argues within 12 to 18 months, max, most media planning will be entirely machine learning led. Right now, his data shows, on average in the US, that 45% of all media is traded programmatically and another 25% is automated with human oversight. On top of all that, there's a new round of investment by some US media companies to tap the surging demand from advertisers for AI, customer profiling and matching via data clean rooms. Disney, for instance, has at least 100 of them now set up specifically for individual advertisers. So what does all this mean for the marketing, tech, media, and agency sectors, and of course, people? What we're certainly seeing in the Australian market is rounds of stealth job cuts that have been underway in agency land and media groups. And in recent weeks, there are rumblings that marketing teams are now starting to see cuts too. How widespread it really is on the brand side remains to be seen, but between the tough consumer economy, offshoring of some media agency and marketing job functions, and automation and AI about to do more, there's some really difficult but important conversations to be had. When I suggest privately to senior industry execs and bosses that a 20 to 30% cut in their staff numbers is pretty likely in the next 2 to 3 years, most agree, but can't say it publicly for fear of a pile-on. Whatever the figure lands on in the next couple of years, the industry, in people terms, has to be smaller. And those who remain, I imagine, will be tougher and smarter. At least that's a hypothesis we're about to put to Jack, along with his thoughts on the recent AI warnings of Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web. Neither Jack or I are confident industry will pause for too long to contemplate what Berners-Lee had to say on AI, but just remember, we tried when, in Berners-Lee's words, and I quote, AI starts creating its own companies, creating holding companies, and generating new versions of itself to run these companies. So on the most upbeat of intros, Jack Myers, welcome back to MI3. Great to have you. I'm glad we can smile at the end of that bleak little setup, but it's great to have you back. Welcome. And let's start with this headline theme. I guess you think AI is such a game changer. Within 12 to 18 months, most media planning will be fully machine-led. What do you mean by that, and what's underpinning that call, Jack?
Well, first of all, Paul, it's good to be back with you, and I'm a loyal reader and fan of MI3. A fair amount of activity here in the U.S., I feel, is led in Australia, so I continue to learn and appreciate the work you do.
Well, it's a big wrap, Jack. Thank you.
AI, separate AI, artificial intelligence, from machine learning. If you look up the word intelligence in the dictionary, you don't necessarily find the word human connected to it. So the concept that it's artificial is artificial to begin with, I think. Let's look at it from the point of view of machine learning. And the fact is that what AI is doing in its current iteration is really empowering the ability to take the multitude of data and analytics tools and details that's become increasingly ubiquitous and beyond the ability of humans to really manage it, manipulate it, and use it intelligently. AI, machine learning, is creating that ability to take the first-party data, the third-party data, the extraneous data, and the human component and bring it all together and make it, I think, increasingly impossible for media planning to be done without machine learning. What becomes even more interesting in the context of the 2019 numbers is the forecast that by 2030, 80% or more of all media planning and buying will be done without human intervention or without the necessity of humans. And if you think that 65% today has some human involvement and is not just completely programmatic, that becomes a really interesting dynamic.
I guess just on that, you're already seeing moves by YouTube and even Meta to do exactly this, right? So it's underway now, to your point.
Yeah, exactly. It's not only underway, it's to the point where we're at the beginning stages of a backlash against programmatic. We're seeing a lot of backlash in the United States, and I'm sure they're about the middleware, the 50, 60, sometimes even 70% of the advertiser spend that's not ultimately getting to the publisher, that's kind of dissolved in the transaction by multiple players. So we're seeing some backlash against that. We're seeing the issues of fraud. We're seeing more attention being paid because of the capabilities now of machine learning to see where the value actually is. So we're seeing a lot more emphasis on performance, on attribution, and all of those tools are coming under deeper inspection. And in an ironic sort of way, it's the AI tools that are doing the inspection. So machines are actually checking on machines. So increasingly humans are out of the mix.
Which is why you say, well, I think you said 80% is all will be all media planning and buying will be done by machines, no human involvement, right? Is that what we get clear on that?
Correct.
Right, by 2030. So there's some big, big implications on that number, Jack. And if you're right in 2019, I reckon you might be right in 2024, just quietly. So let's talk to what you're seeing in the US market overall before we get to take a bit of a dive into some of the specifics. What's happening inside media companies, agency groups, and how the market is sort of shifting over there at the moment? What are the big observations you're seeing, Jack, on the moves and maneuvers and companies trying to adjust for this, if they are at all?
Well, we're really in the end stage of a long-term transformation wrought by digital and the internet in terms of the legacy media companies increasingly consolidating. We're seeing Paramount more than likely being sold perhaps to Ellison and his company. Of course, the company that's about to buy Paramount or in negotiations to buy Paramount, the father of the owner is Larry Ellison, the founder of Oracle. So there's some big technology capability, but it's a Hollywood studio.
And a bit of money, Jack.
And a bit of money. So there's that. There's, of course, the Warner Brothers Discovery comes out of its two-year hold on acquisition, doing acquisitions or being acquired. There are major sports rights, especially the NBA, up for grabs in the next year. We've got a huge political year this year, 9 to 14 billion, depending on whose numbers you're looking at that are in political spending.
Let's be clear on that, Jack. When you say $9 to $14 billion this year will be spent in the US on the presidential election campaign, that's what will be spent. Is that right?
All political elections across the country, local, regional, state,
okay, right,
national. It's a huge number, heavily weighted toward local television stations. It keeps them alive. I expect that by 2026, whoever wins the presidential election, we're going to see re-regulation of political ad spending. So that treasure trove of dollars that comes in every other year may diminish. Of course, there's a huge issue with the digital marketplace. We're seeing some concerns about retail media, and that's how you and I connected a number of times, talk about retail spending, because there's so much in Australia that's led in what's happening now in the U.S. Brian Weiser predicted $51 billion in retail spend in the U.S. I think he's underestimating the number. But again, more recently, Ad Exchanger published a kind of an expose on some of the mid and smaller size retail media networks. So there's some concerns about the open web and whether they're in fact arbitraging non-retail media inside the retail media networks.
And so what's the upshot of that as you see it now then? What's your take on that? On the arbitraging, the middle players, essentially there's another ad tech system taking place here. Is that essentially what this is, the birth of another?
We're on the verge of what I believe will be a major consolidation. You could even call it a collapse of the programmatic marketplace in terms of the hundreds of companies that are in the business today. Ultimately, in any industry like that evolves entrepreneurially and with venture capital, it's going to consolidate. And we're on the cusp of massive consolidation. The trade desk has captured the majority of the spend. You've got two or three other players in there who are Google DSP, a couple of others that are dominating the market.
Xandr in there. Where's Xandr and Mike? That's a Microsoft unit, right?
Well, Xandr, the Netflix contract with Xandr, I believe at the end of 2024, that's up. It's consolidated into Microsoft. Microsoft Ads just brought Amanda Richmond, who's an agency person, in to be their CRO. Very talented, very well-liked, whether a buyer can make a transition to a seller, especially a technology and data seller, is an interesting question. Microsoft's never succeeded as a major player, and Xandr is probably not going to, in my opinion, will be absorbed in somehow to the Microsoft family. So I don't consider that to be a major player in the business.
Just a few small observations there from you, Jack, already. Got anything else or you're out? Is the cupboard empty? Surely it must be empty by now. There's only about, I don't know, 17 big calls.
There's nonstop stuff to talk about.
Keep going. The point is keep going, Jack.
Let's go back to you started with AI, and I know we want to come back to Tim Berners-Lee. AI is hundreds of players. It's almost as if there's no time for innovation anymore. That, you know, you used to have, whether it was, you know, cable coming in on top of broadcast or, you know, the internet and mobile, there was time for innovation, time for development, time for the advertisers and the agencies to kind of go through a period of trying to push it out of the way and then slowly investing in it and moving in, finding its right place, and then the winners survive and the losers collapse.
There was a bit of pacing, wasn't there?
Yeah, and that pacing is continually compressed with each new technology. With AI, there's, while of course machine learning has been around for many, many years, in its current form and its current use, there's been no time for advertisers to really figure it out. So we're going to have a pullback. We're going to have a pushback and a pullback. We're going to see, you know, the form of a collapse, but that'll be a much quicker collapse. And ultimately, there'll be three or four unicorns that'll survive. Of course, ChatGPT will be one of them out of the whole AI business. The advertiser impact beyond the data and analytics and the machine learning, I believe, is going to be more impactful in the creative community and the re-emergence of the consolidated agencies, creative and media. And that's the big story for me for 2025-26.
Creative and media getting back together.
Almost. It has to. It has to. With AI, it has to start feeding the creative component into the attribution again and look at the two together. And that's going to be where the industry is going to reinvent itself. So I look positively at the opportunities for advertising as the machine learning, but we're just moving too quickly for the industry to adapt. And those who can't adapt ultimately are going to disappear. It's like retailing. If you didn't adapt to, you know, the emergence of e-commerce and online selling, or find a place in the, you know, the retail marketplace for in-person shopping and experiences, you're going to disappear. So I believe 24, 25, we're going to see massive consolidation, massive contraction, and then 25, 26, 27, a reemerging, a rebirth of the advertising business.
Well, super interesting, but I do have to ask you, when you talked a few minutes back about the creative and media shops marrying again, getting back together, creative agencies will love that. They'll get that. But media agencies, they're going to struggle with that. They're the masters of the universe now. Will they want to bring that back in? They've been so, they've spent the last 20 years proving how they're brilliant on their own.
Well, Paul, let's take a step back on the realities of the media agency business and how they're making their money. They've made their money by bringing efficiency to the marketplace and to the advertiser. Advertising budgets, as a result, have moved out of marketing and over to procurement and purchasing at most major marketers. So the marketing departments, the brand managers, have spend minimal time, effort, energy, or focus on media. It's heavily in the financial area. And the efficiency part, it's been driven, well, it'll never bottom out until it gets to zero. Cost efficiency is less of a profit maker for the large holding company agencies. Increasingly, they're in both the buying and selling business. That's another area that the ANA and others, the Association of National Advertisers and others are exploring, this area of agencies being in the internally in the arbitrage business. They used to say, we're transparent about being non-transparent. Today, they're very transparent. So if you look at the Wall Street reports of most of the major holding companies, they're reporting their internal transactions, and it's one of their most profitable business areas. So the idea of efficiency being the driver of the media business on both the buyer and the seller side is coming to an end. Procurement people are beginning to use AI, machine learning, to look at attribution and to say, we better get smarter about what's driving our business forward and not just look at media from where's the cheapest way to drive impressions. Who are those impressions? What are they doing for us? And ultimately, from a, you can say the creative agency is going to be the beneficiary. I think it's a media agency, that especially starting at the smaller, mid-sized regional agencies that already are self-contained, creative plus media, where the data is going to be informing both sides and you're going to have to be doing both. So the media agencies, I believe, as Accenture has bought Droga5, it's a large, one of the largest media buying quietly organizations, but they bought a creative agency, Droga5. And we're going to see probably happening outside the major holding companies first, but then the holding companies, I believe, will be forced to bring the creative back together with the media. And I think in some ways, Mark Reed at WPP sees that. If you look at some of the things he's done with VML and bringing the, you know, direct
response together,
YNR together. I think Ogilvy has still, you know, still does a lot of its own internal media. So I think we're going to see a major shift. I don't think we're going to have to see a major shift in how marketers look at the total advertising business and stop and bring media responsibility on the creative side outside of procurement. We talk about the 80-20. I look more at the 20% that's not going to be machine learning, that is going to be human. That's where the profitability is going to be for the agencies.
You better unpack that a little bit. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you look at the 20% that's not dependent on procurement, purchasing, programmatic, machine learning, AI, it's going to be where the data, still data, is going to be used to, I'm still on the 95% is going to be data informed.
Okay. Yeah, good.
But it'll be used to do the creative ideation, whether it's the big sports deals, the sponsorships, the branded entertainment, owning their own media and their own creative development, as you know, so many companies now are launching their own media buying. I think that's somewhat short term. The Uber and Lyft and Home Depot and you name it, they're all selling media now. And that's going to be creating an increasing problem over the next 2 to 3 years. But ultimately, that 20% that's going to be idea-driven, data-informed, but idea-driven, that's where the profitability is going to be. That's for the buyers and for the brands. There was in the 90s, a guy named Phil Garascio was CMO at General Motors. And he used to say that he was the first one to really take the AOR, the agency of record, that had both media buying planning as well as creative. Took 17, put them together into what became GM PlanWorks, GM MediaWorks. He used to say 95% of our ad budgets are to maintain competitive parity. 5% is where I sell cars.
Do you reckon that's changed?
I think it's maybe 80%, 20%.
You like that 80-20 thing, don't you? I just want to capture you on what you say is the upshot from that retail media intermediary play, where there's that sort of whole supply chain in the middle taking taxes and nicking bits and pieces. The upshot of that in retail media, you said it's a bit in trouble. What do you mean by that? What's going to happen in retail media?
Well, I don't think it's trouble, but there's just too many players. In the United States, ultimately, it's going to be every mom and pop is going to be figuring out how do they get manufacturers to help fund their advertising. And there's an old 1936 law called the Robinson-Patman Act that says if a manufacturer provides a benefit to one retailer, they have to provide to all. So if they're giving something to Amazon, they have to. It's an old, outdated law, but it's still in place. Ultimately, manufacturers are already looking at what's working and what's not working in the retail marketplace. They're past the point of just taking what we always called below the line promotional dollars and moving them up into media to provide the same sales promotion results. Well, now that they're pulling budgets away from more legacy, more traditional media, and especially into digital media, they're finding it's not working. So P&G is in the lead on really looking at the digital media spend overall, as well as how they're allocating budgets to retail media and where those retail media dollars are actually being allocated. And we're seeing some reports that retail media companies, providers, retail media networks are buying inventory on the open network and that are not part of their retail allocation and reselling it or arbitraging it. So I'm not the one saying that. That's being said by some journalists and reporters and research companies, Adlytics and others that are drilling down into it. But it's opening a can of worms.
Jack, I do want to go back to one thing you slipped in there earlier on quietly in and around agencies and media. You said Accenture is one of the biggest players in media quietly in the US. Please explain, as they say here in Australia, boys.
They're one of the top digital media planning and buying groups. And I mentioned they've acquired a creative agency, Droga5, integrated it in, changed the name. They are very deep in the digital marketplace in a very quiet way, but they are one of the top 2-3 buyers of digital media in the United States. I don't know how their footprint expands beyond the U.S. They're very quiet, but they were very early in making data and analytics their unique resource and capability. It's called, you know, it's Accenture. It's an interactive group. It's separated out from the consulting business at Accenture. But if you think they're not merging or finding a way to integrate their consulting clients and take the knowledge that they're gaining deep in embedded deeply into the senior management of their clients on the consulting side and using that to develop, inform, and improve the nature of their media buying, we'd be making a mistake. I'm sure that's the case. But Accenture is a company. I wish I knew more about it, frankly. And I think what we're talking about here, Paul, is that we should all be looking a little more deeply at what Accenture has been doing for the last several years. A number of years ago, they brought Nikki Mendonca in from EMEA. She was with one of the large agencies, OMD, I think, to help develop. They're very deep in their talent, but they are very quiet. And I think we should all know what they're doing.
One of the things you said in our stories and podcasts a couple of years ago, Jack, was this, and I'll quote you, senior agency staff are being replaced by early stage team members who are really now dominating planning and buying. The decision makers are no longer those senior touch points for the media sellers for whom relationships have historically been the currency of the industry. Today, the currency is data. So my question is, yes, the agency world has been skewing younger in buying and planning, younger and data-led, as you say, not relationship-based, but will that change too with machines? What happens to that emerging or first tier of people coming in their 20s and 30s? What happens there with those job functions and those people?
That group grows because there's more need for, even though it may not be human-led, ultimately there have to be humans managing. If you look at the total agency marketplace and you combine all different component parts, the creative, the media, the PR, the promotion, and you put it all together, I believe that stays relatively where it is today. The capabilities, the resources, where it's being allocated, where the people, where the entry level opportunities are, where the growth level opportunities are, will shift. The good news at that entry level, which at least in the US has always been very low paid competitively versus other industries, the entry level salaries will have to become more competitive and grow. The skill sets are more sophisticated. They require more experience. They're coming from different types of backgrounds and experiences. So they'll be coming in not necessarily right out of school, but they'll be coming in from the military. They'll be coming in from other careers because advertising, in order to compete, will have to increase the salary levels. So I think the good news is salaries in the industry will go up. Today, going back to the numbers, Paul, if you go back 15 years, and I can't speak for Australia, but in the U.S., about 65% of agency media employees had been in the business for 15 years plus, and about 15% in the business 8 years or fewer. Today, that's flipped. 65% of media agency employees have been in the business 8 years or fewer, 35% 3 years or fewer, and only 20% have been in the business 15 years or more. What's interesting about those in the business 3 years or fewer, 20% of them already have direct reports, management responsibility.
Crikey, right.
So that's continuing. The numbers there will go down. I have no doubt about it. But I believe that there'll be the talent will be reallocated to other parts of the agency business that do still require more human intervention.
So do you think that ratio of sort of the weighting, I should say, of that to under 8 years in their careers will shift? So that's the first question. Will that change or is it going to stay in that sort of level? And the second part of that question is, what are those people that remain? What are their new skill sets, their jobs? What do they look like? What's best placed?
Data scientists, information sciences, computer analysts. If you think about, you know, NASA had the, you know, the space headquarters where you're looking at the big screens, or you're looking at the stock market and you're looking at the people doing the transactions. There'll be an increasing amount of real-time bidding for media, inventory pools, where you go, how you allocate it. It will become look, I'm not the expert on this, Paul. I can only, you know, say here's what some of the data that I look at shows me is that we're peaking in terms of that shift in the years in business or in the age, in the generation gap. And it's very generational. Gen X is, you know, growing out of the business. Gen Y, boomers are growing out of the business. As the current generation evolves, they're more diverse, they're more scientific, they're more data oriented. They will be more likely to have a place in this future business than those who are currently in the business 15 years plus, who are going to be increasingly outdated. So I think those who are early stage now will have a long potential career. Those who are coming into the business will have a long potential career. Those who have been in the business for 15 years plus, I think it's going to be a tough future for them. So I don't see necessarily that age skew changing for another decade.
The problem with that, Jack, is that's you and me. You know that. You're talking about you and me being like, we might as well just pack.
Oh, I'm already way too old to be. Paul, I'm a lot older than you. So I'm teaching at the University of Arizona. I'm already figuring out the next
thing. We've got the professor mantle. Oh, look, I better have more respect.
Exactly.
Than I do already.
Exactly.
Hey, so very quickly, creative agencies or creatives as we know them or what they're going to become.
Well, if they don't figure out how to use Sora and use AI for creative, they're going to be outdated. But creativity changes. It's the prompts. It's what you put into the AI. It's the creativity that goes into it. It's how you differentiate what the output is, like anything else. You know, technology has made films, movies, and television special effects much, much more entertaining, much better. Animation has improved exponentially. So it's like any other advance in technology. As it becomes more embedded in advertising technology, I think it changes and makes advertising much better. I think most advertising today sucks. And, you know, it amazes me how it makes it through the approval process.
But to be fair, Jack, we talked about advertising getting better in late 90s when, you know, .com was coming. It was all going to be bloody amazing and better. We got more personalized, perhaps marginally, but it ain't that much better, is it? So is this how, why is this going to be? We shouldn't go there. That's a long conversation. How about we move on?
Yeah, it is. And I don't disagree with you, by the way. I think that's a great question. And maybe it's wishful thinking and aspirational that advertising gets better.
Well, that's what university lecturers get away with, I guess, these days. Hey, we're talking about data clean rooms, Jack, and the big proliferation. Yes, because I've got a lot to cover and I'm going to cherry pick. So it is for the media sector. And, you know, you've got a lot of thoughts on what's going on with the media business, media owners. Have they left their run too late? I'll let you sort of have a crack at that one. But also there are some interesting developments in pockets. And I think, you know, with the data clean room thing is a signal, I guess. And you've got some reservations around that too, though, I think.
Well, clean rooms and walled gardens are kind of intersectional. Disney, for example, has over 100 clean rooms. Rita Farrow's been very open about the fact that they will create clean rooms where individual advertisers through their agency partners or directly can put their first party data into a dedicated clean room. Disney will then take its first party data, marry it, match it, and find the right Disney inventory that's most relevant for those consumers. And so it's two first party data sets coming together. What's interesting is that Disney has a partnership with Precision 8451, which is Kroger, the large grocery chain here in the U.S., the largest, and they're buying and they're doing business together to put Precision 8451 data into the Disney mix and vice versa. So NBCU has clean rooms. They're all the major media companies now are haves and have nots. If you don't have access to first party data, which comes through through subscriptions, through credit cards, Comcast and NBC, they have the Comcast data sets. the subscription models at Hulu for Disney or Disney Plus, Peacock for NBCU, Paramount Plus. So where you have the first party data opportunities, if you don't have first party data, you're screwed fundamentally as a media seller. And that means you're going to have to go into a pool, a programmatic pool. And then the trade desk and others will create compile clean rooms, and they'll clean the data before their first party data, which creates a whole other set of questions and concerns.
What's your biggest reservation about what becomes of that sort of development? Because you're right, set up and started by the walled gardens, the tech platforms like Meta and Google, right, with clean rooms. Media companies are following. What's your biggest reservation on media companies following that path?
Biggest reservation about clean rooms is who's cleaning the data, who's validating that it's clean, who's judging and who's making the decisions on how to use that data. And then also, is it going to be used for political purposes? We're already seeing, you know, for political purposes, Meta, of course, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter or X. We're seeing all of them being, you know, their data being used to target more effectively for political messaging. And that opens a whole can of worms that leads us right back to Tim Berners-Lee.
Which is exactly where we're going to go. Thank you very much for the bridge, Jack Myers. So it does get us to Tim Berners-Lee. And on the one hand, this is interesting from my perspective on you, is on one hand, you argue AI is a game changer. But on the other, Berners-Lee's concerns have got you thinking. So what are the sort of, maybe just give us his core themes, and can we, should we, as an industry be doing something about it, or we'll talk about it, you and I'll talk about it anyway, and we'll get it ignored and everyone else will just move on. Why should we be listening?
Not to go too deeply into the woods with you.
You are a media ecologist, Jack.
Exactly. You said I'm a media ecologist. And that's actually, I majored in media ecology at NYU. My professor and mentor was Dr. Neil Postman, who wrote a book called...
Whoa, Technopoly.
Yeah, Amusing Ourselves to Death, Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business, which really focuses... It was written in 1982, but it's very relevant to the realities today of how news and entertainment have merged and are one, and the dangers of an interconnected society when media can be used for political ends through entertainment, by creating news as entertainment. And of course, we're at that stage now. We're seeing that. Neil Postman's mentor was Marshall McLuhan, who wrote, "The medium is the massage. The medium is the message. The medium is the message." And that's what Tim Berners-Lee is concerned about. To quote him, he said that, you know, his critique, his call to action, resonate deeply with those of us who have been navigating the media landscape, advocating for a more humane and equitable digital world. Berners-Lee, who of course founded the internet, really reflects on the web's journey from a decentralized network fostering creativity, collaboration, and compassion to what he calls its current state of concentrated power and exploitative business models. And that's been a concern. You go back to Brave New World and Aldous Huxley and Fahrenheit 451, Kurt Vonnegut. It's up to Marshall McLuhan and up to Neil Postman. Neil Postman was my mentor. He was mentored by Marshall McLuhan, who followed Aldous Huxley. It all goes back. You go back to H.G. Wells in The War of the Worlds, and it's all the same theme that we're on a path between destruction and education. And they fear, and Berners-Lee fears, that we're moving rapidly down a path toward destruction and that we're failing to really educate society, humanity, to use the internet to inform in a more compassionate, empathetic way that supports a free, democratic society, and that ultimately all of them would predict, based on where we are today with the internet, with digital, with AI, especially, that we're heading toward a more autocratic world.
You can blame me for having a bleak setup, but I tell you what, you're going there and for the final leg as well. So thanks, we're on the same page.
You know, it's inevitable, but you know, that I think we are at a point in society and culture in the United States today, but around the world also, where if we're not really paying attention to the medium is the message. And if we're not paying attention to the media and the medium and how advertisers are funding it and are the source of the funding that supports these shifts and these moves, then we're in a dangerous place as an industry and as a society.
Yeah, there's a convenient detachment and denial there that doesn't surface much in the industry. I mean, to your point, basically, advertisers funded, you know, the tech platforms that we have today, right? The social platforms today, which is it's grandly ironic.
And Paul, if we look at all the concerns that I raised about, you know, programmatic and clean rooms, and if you depend on advertisers to be smart and pay attention and make a difference and change things, that's not the right place to look for change, unfortunately.
So, which is why I guess you said sort of mid this conversation that everything has to slow down, Jack. You're advocating for that, right? Is that, did I get that right? With AI, that is.
I'm advocating for it. Tim Berners-Lee and 100 other tech people with AI have advocated for slowing down, but it's not going to happen. It's just not realistic.
No, that's right. Exactly. Final couple of takeouts for the year ahead. Jack, you sort of did say 24, 25. You've kind of given us some macro themes there, but say for the next 6 to 8 months, 12 months, what's top of mind for you on the watch list?
2024, the economy will continue, the media and advertising economy will continue to be strong. The holding companies will continue to look good in the stock market. We're going to see, you know, tremendous shifts in consolidation, contraction at all levels. And 25, I believe, is going to be a very difficult year for the advertising economy globally for a variety of reasons, not the least of which will be that the implementation of AI is going to create a lot of need for reallocation of spending and refocusing of spending, and probably reasonably massive cutback in spending as marketers figure out what's working and what's not working. 26, 27, as I said, I believe we're going to see a reemergence of the combination of creative and media and AI becoming more of a force, the marketplace beginning to sort itself out. So 24 is going to look pretty much what you're already seeing in the marketplace in the first quarter, first half. 25, a year of decline, disruption, economic concerns, some real failures and massive consolidation. And then 26, 27, 28, the beginning of what I think will be several decades of reimagined industry.
Jack Myers, thank you for joining all the way from Whoop Whoop, Arizona. And I look forward to having you on again. We've got to have you another 6 months. It's fascinating stuff. Thanks for joining, Jack.
Thank you, Paul.
This MI3 audio edition was presented by Paul McIntyre. That's moi. Producer Nick Slater. Music by Matt Dwyer. For more episodes, go to listener.com or download the Listener app and search MI3 audio edition to listen for free. Listener.